The South Akron Youth Mentorship is exactly what the name implies. These folks mentor the youth of Akron, Ohio. If you would like to volunteer or perhaps help with a charitable donation, please visit saymentor.org and find out how you can help out today. That's saymentor.org.
Welcome to the Phil Nason's Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll talk a lot of basketball today. We'll even talk some baseball. But up first, we didn't get a chance to do this last week. And as a professional coach, I understand what it's like to achieve milestones. Coach Greg Popovich from the San Antonio Spurs, I don't care if you like him or if you hate him. I don't care if you like the Spurs or hate the Spurs. 1,000 wins as one of his former assistants said is a massive number, and it's a massive milestone. And here to talk about that, and maybe we'll get around to some basketball about the Spurs too. Please welcome from poundingtherock.com, J.R. Wilco is in the house. J.R., how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing great, Phil. How are you?
I'm fantastic. 1,000 wins is a freaking lot of wins. It's a massive number when you think about it. Yeah. When you think about this, too, and this is such a disposable society, meaning that people change jobs often, to do it with one team. And if I'm not mistaken, every one of those wins was with Tim Duncan, at least on the roster, right?
No.
The first half of the first year wasn't, right? Or first year and a half.
Yeah. So 1,000 wins is just crazy numbers. That's 12 straight. It's more than 12 straight years of just wins. I mean, no one else in the league has even coached with the team for 12 years, much less have 12 years worth of wins. It's just insane when you look at all the changes that have happened in the league, all the different, you know, the different collective bargaining agreements that have happened since he took over, the difference in the change of the style of the play, all of the rule changes and everything. And if anything, he's just as strong as he was before. I think it was Coach Budenholzer who said that Pop is even more passionate now, he thought, than he was at the beginning. He's like, I don't know how he does it. So it's just it's a testament to not just his system that he puts in place, and it's kind of funny to say the system because there have been several systems over the years, but not just to his basketball mind, but his ability to stay motivated and stay passionate about what he does and stay involved, you know, as even the players themselves have evolved in the different kinds of just the way that players are now. It's just man, it's an amazing feat.
It is, and I can speak on that too because I've coached tennis for 30 years, and I retired at the end of last year, as you know. But here's the thing: that's just it. The players, how they think and act, and even the amount of respect that they show, has changed. And you've gone through generations when you've coached that long, and you see the difference in how people act and react and whatever, and you have to be able to adapt with that. And especially when you're coaching people at the top level. Now, I'm not talking about the Roger Federers, but the juniors, which is a very difficult job. And Greg Popovich has done the same type of thing. He's had to evolve. He's had to change his style because you can't go in there and keep what you want to do. It just doesn't work. But what he's been able to do, though, is have consistency with what he was doing. He had a foundation, which all coaches who have any longevity do, but he's able to adapt, and he's turned what you see now. We're going to talk about this tomorrow, JR, but what you see now with this rejuvenation of team basketball is back, and it's because of Greg Popovich.
It's true. It's true. You're talking about the way that people change, the way that cultures change, the way that, you know, sports leagues and players develop. Like you can't coach unless you can relate. And there are some amazing coaches that over the years, it just seemed like suddenly all the wheels fell off because somewhere along the line, there was a tipping point with the players and they just could not relate anymore. The guy could coach basketball, understood basketball. That was not the issue. But you can't just do same old forever and expect it to work. And that's the thing about Popovich and the way that he's been able to mold this team around the talent available while bringing all of those disparate personalities and talents into play, pointing them in all different kinds of directions, going from the Tim Duncan days when the Spurs were perennially the slowest paced team to flipping that all on its head, you know, 2009, 2010, 2010, 2011, when they were the fastest paced team in the league. And instead of reducing the number of possessions, exploding the number of possessions. Possessions are good. We want as many as we can. And shoot, I mean, the guys used to get chewed out and benched when they took a shot too early in the shot clock. And now you got guys coming down and hitting above the break threes off a fast break. And Pop's okay with it. It's crazy. So watching all of that change while so much still stays the same. You know, there's still a Spurs type player. There's a Popovich kind of guy. And yeah, maybe Kawhi Leonard has way more tattoos than anybody, anyone in the entire, than all the entire roster combined from Popovich's first like 6 or 7 years in the league. But it's not about that outward show anymore. It's not about what everyone looks like. They still carry themselves in a team first, not a me first way. And what you said about the way that the team ball is being so sought after and so prioritized now by the entire league, really, you know, when you're successful, there's copycats. When you win the championship, then there's trends. And that's what we're seeing now, especially with the way that Atlanta is working under Coach Bud. And it's obvious that this system can be translated out across the NBA. And just when you have so many people across the league and so many commentators talking about just enjoying the way that basketball was played by the Spurs last year as they beat the Heat in the finals, that kind of thing, you're going to see copycats. And I love it.
Who doesn't? It's interesting. I like to see that too. But whatever you want to say about Coach Popovich, 1,000 wins, man, is massive. I mean, when you think about it, I can't put a number on what my students have done because I didn't really keep track of that sort of thing because mine was more development for the next level. Mm-hmm. But what I can tell you is when you've done it that long, and for me it was, you know, you talked about how he didn't lose interest. And he was able to continue to adapt and that he still has a fresh perspective. That was what stopped me, is that you just lose that at some point. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't know how much longer he's going to coach. And maybe it doesn't matter, but 1,000 wins is a lot of freaking wins. And I'm serious. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Spurs, but you know that. Whatever. It is what it is. I'm a Knicks fan, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I gotta sit. When I sit down and look at that, I just go, "Wow, this dude is freaking good at what he does." Because that's 50 wins every season he's coached in the NBA. Who's done that? Forget it. And I'm gonna go one step further, and maybe
every year since Duncan, right? So there was that one off year and that they got into the lottery.
Okay.
But since then,
Here's the deal. You know, you can talk about who the greatest coaches are that have ever coached in the NBA, and you can bring up Red Holtzman, you can bring up Phil Jackson, you can bring up Red Auerbach, you can even bring up Bill Russell. But I'm going to say this with all, and I'm not a fan of the Spurs, really. Greg Popovich is the best coach in the history of the NBA.
Wow. Those are strong words. I don't even know that I am a Spurs fan. I don't know that I could say that, but then again, I would be judged as a Spurs fan doing it. So that's a huge statement. I like hearing it for
sure. It's 1,000 wins, man. What can you say about wins?
Well, he's not the only one to reach 1,000 wins either, though.
Right. That's not the point. He did it with one team.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though. He's the also the general manager of that basketball, or not the general manager, but the president of basketball operations. He calls the shots. And R.C. Buford should take a big pat on the back because he's done it right alongside him. Mm-hmm. And I think this is fantastic. Congratulations, Coach Popovich. Well done. JR, thanks a lot for being on the show. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll talk about the Western Conference.
All right, look forward to it.
All right, that was JR Wilco. You can catch him at poundingtherock.com, and we'll be right back. You are listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. It's fantasy basketball time, and even though the week is shorter, we still have lots to talk about. And joining me to do just that from rotowire.com, Alex Reclean is in the house. Alex, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, Phil, and thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's nice not to have to fill up my lineup. I know some people
I know some people have to do that
on Monday for their leagues, even though they don't play again until Thursday or Friday. But one thing to keep in mind is that Dallas and Oklahoma City have three games this week. Teams with one game are Memphis, Minnesota, Brooklyn, and Utah. Another thing you want to remember is to check your league waiver wire, or I'm sorry, your trade deadline, and find out when that is, because some leagues it's this week, some leagues it's next week. So check all those things. And the biggest question of the day, Alex, what to do about Blake Griffin?
Well, so, I mean, typically when we ask that question, we think about, you know, who to replace. But you can't really replace your first-round pick. And so when I hear that question, I like to think about it a little bit more strategically and think, all right, so he's gone at least for the next 3 weeks and possibly, maybe, probably longer, which puts him in line to be coming back around playoff time. And unlike most franchise players who you sometimes worry about them resting during the fantasy playoffs, Griffin is going to have to be working himself back into game shape and working himself back into, you know, the night-to-nightliness of the season. So I actually think that since there is no replacing him anyways, this may make an interesting buy low opportunity if you're a team that's safely in the playoffs in a playoff format league. You might want to go see if you can get Blake Griffin for something. See if you can acquire him, because it'd be great to have him, and someone who is more on the fence might need someone more active for these next couple of weeks.
That's good advice. And you're right. You know, I have Blake Griffin in one league, and I'm in first place in that league. It's a roto league, so we really don't have playoffs. We just go all the way through March and April, actually. But, man, if I were in a daily league and I was on the bubble and I had Blake Griffin and I needed to make the playoffs, I have to get rid of him because I have to make the playoffs.
Exactly.
So I would have to get rid of him. And Alex brings up a very good point about buying him low, because you're not going to get a lot for him, but you're going to get something, and something is better than nothing. And if you're a guy who's like me, who is comfortably in the playoffs more than likely, and in the other leagues that I'm not in that aren't roto leagues, I'm good there too, you might have somebody, some extra bulk for your playoff matchups. It's now, an interesting conundrum.
There is one player who is available. You know, he's below your Mendoza line, 50%, and sort of matches some of Griffin's abilities, and that's Mozgov. Timofey Mozgov is putting up pretty good scoring for a waiver wire candidate, good rebounding. He has a really positive impact on your field goal percentage, and he's a little bit damaging to your free throw percentage, all of which is similar to the types of things that you would have Blake Griffin doing on your team. So if you have a team that sort of was well built and really fit together well, Timofey Mozgov might be available and is a player who, he's a very poor person's Blake Griffin, but he kind of fits what you're looking for.
You know, I recommended Timofey Mozgov this week because they have two games. I usually, You know, my Mendoza line's only for this show. I mean, because it's universal. You want to give them the most opportunities to find somebody. But yeah, Timofey Mozgov is a beast. He's 43% owned too. That's a good suggestion. You know, Taj Gibson's out there too, and he's not playing too poorly. You know who else is out there for them? Robin Lopez is out there, 44% owned. These guys are all on my blog this week. I highlighted all of those guys. Now, it's trade time, and we got a couple of trades, or at least one trade here. This is going to be interesting to discuss. Al Jefferson in exchange for Paul Millsap. What would you do if you owned either or and you were offered the other?
I would prefer have Millsap, but depending on team construction, you could make a strong argument for Jefferson, for Big Al. I like Millsap's ability to be helpful in free throws and three-pointers, but Jefferson's got his value. I mean, Jefferson gets more blocks, he gets more rebounds. They're about equal to one another in points. I also think that an advantage in Jefferson's favor is Jefferson can play better than he's currently playing. I don't think the same can be said about Millsap. So there's an element of getting a player for cheaper than he would otherwise go for with Jefferson that's not there at Millsap. Millsap, I think the only way to go is down. Personally, I'd rather Millsap, and if I had Jeff and you offered me Millsap, I'd take it. But a strong argument could be made either way.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one of the things that's very underrated are block shots. Mm-hmm. You can lose championships with a block shot, and Al Jefferson will get those for you. You know, he might not get a lot of them, but he'll get more than Paul Millsap will.
Yep.
You know, the other thing, too, is with Atlanta being so comfortably ahead of the pace, in that playoff round, he might not play so much. Mike Budenholzer is a Greg Popovich candidate, you know, guy, and he rests his players. We've seen him do this before. Millsap is someone he's going to rest, especially as the season goes on and as Atlanta probably or more than likely expands its lead in the East. Because there's just no stopping them right now. I think if it's me and they gave me Al Jefferson, I would probably do it. I would not worry so much about the threes, and I would go for the rebounds that you're going to get from Al Jefferson. The fact that, like Alex said, you're going to see him probably play better. But more importantly, Charlotte is a bubble team, and they're going to need Al Jefferson. Point. And they're going to need him down in the crunch, and he's going to play every night. If he's healthy, he's going to play, and they're going to look to him to produce. So right now, I know it doesn't look the way it should, and it sounds funny, but look at the long term, and I bet you'll get more for Al Jefferson than you will for Paul Millsap.
I mean, yeah, everything you said is spot on, especially the point about Charlotte being a bubble team.
Oh, that's the whole thing. Now we've got Nikola Pekovic. A listener wanted to know if he's worth picking up this week. What do you do with a Nikola Pekovic, Alex?
Sure. The thing about Pekovic that makes him interesting is not just his short-term use, but his long-term use. I mean, this is a player who last year, maybe even this year, was going in 6th, 7th, 8th rounds of drafts. The arrival of Gorgui Dieng has really impacted Pekovic's value, and Pekovic's propensity for getting hurt has really impacted his value. But when Pekovic is out there, he's a quality producer, and he's someone who you can keep on your team for more than just a week at a time. If you're looking for that long-term investment, then by all means, pick up Pekovic. I mean, you're getting him for the right price. You're getting him for waivers. There's no harm there. There are people I'm more short-term interested in, but over the long-term, no one really jumps out as an obviously better long-term get, a possibly better long-term get, but And maybe Robin Lopez is probably better over the long term. But other than Robin Lopez, there's no one out there right now who I think is obviously better over the long term than Pekovic.
I agree with you. You know, Robin Lopez has a replacement, Chris Kamen, if they need to go there. And if they need to rest him, but Nikola Pekovic, if he's healthy, they're going to have to play him. They Minnesota, I know that they're in tank mode, but still, they're trying to win. Those guys, they still want to win. It's right. Not about not wanting to win. That's the front offices that do that.
Exactly.
And Pekovic, he's good for blocks and he's good for rebounds. And the thing is when Wiggins starts to get tired up there, he's going to chuck a lot of bricks. And when that other kid, Ricky Rubio, gets tired and they have to force him to shoot, he shoots bricks too. Somebody's got to rebound those. Georgie Dang can't do it all. So, yeah, take him. Pick him up short term. Run a streamer. That's what I would do. And just look for a different guy every night because they're available. For some reason, there's a lot of big men available. Yeah. Alex, great stuff today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure as always.
I enjoy working with you too, my friend. That was Alex McLean. You can catch him over at rotowire.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. Cleveland Cavaliers are a team that we follow. And we haven't been able to talk Cavs basketball with this guy for the last couple weeks because he's been doing his thing watching the games because they've been playing on Sunday when he comes on to pre-record his segment. And joining me to talk about the state of the Cavs at the All-Star break, please welcome from fearthesword.com, Justin Rowan is in the house. Justin, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing pretty great. Thanks for having me back.
It's always great to have you here, dude. Always great to have you here. We were busy trashing the Cavs while you were gone. And that's something that I enjoy doing, as you know. I like to do that sometimes. It makes for great radio. And one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is this. Where are the Cavs now as opposed to 3 weeks ago when you were last here?
Well, I mean, they're basically a completely different team. The two trades of both for Mozgov and Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith have completely change the Cavs because they finally have the supplemental guys to go along with their big three. Both Tristan Thompson and Mozgov are great fits next to the big three, and JR for the time being appears to be that as well, and Shumpert's fitting in really well as well. So you now have the complete game where they're actually starting to make the extra pass. There's not as much isolation ball. They're playing defense and they're winning a lot of games.
You know what? They are playing a lot better. They are moving the ball a little bit more. You know, I told you privately when this happened that Shumpert, you would love having him. And mm-hmm. I think that's the – and what I said was – turns out to be correct in that he's a fantastic defender. And on a better basketball team that spaces the floor better without a ball hog, he would get that shot off. And he's done that. And I think it's great. You got stuck with J.R. Smith, though. And I tell my best friend this all the time because he's a monster Cavs fan. We'd go back and forth all day, right? And I say to him, I say, you know what? This is the honeymoon period. Wait until he leaves the seat up and pees all over the floor. You're not going to like him so much. Because I'm a Knicks fan, and in his first full season with the Knicks, he was the sixth man of the year. He was fantastic. And he's doing the same things now that he did then. But it is what it is, and he's shooting the ball nice.
Yeah, he's always been a good shooter. And you know what? I've been somewhat of a J.R. Smith apologist his entire career, so I know what's coming. The nice thing with the Cavs is he's getting a lot of really wide open looks, where typically with New York, he had to bring the ball up and actually initiate offense, which is where you see him be a ball hog and take bad shots. But, I mean, if he's just getting the ball in open positions and his only job is to shoot it, I mean, it's going to limit the amount of times where he makes you smack your head.
Yeah, that's true. And you know you're going to smack your head. You know with him because it never fails. He's been like that his entire career. But I was his biggest supporter for that sixth man of the year. I started that talk about the fourth week of the season, and people all thought I was crazy. And he's playing the same way, and I can recognize that. But like I said, the honeymoon will end at some point, and JR will be JR. But until then, you can enjoy him. But Mozgov has turned into a fantastic piece to this puzzle. And I think they were right in picking him up, and they wanted him last year, if I'm not mistaken. They didn't want to give up what they had to give up then. But now that they've got this loaded team, it was easier, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, the pick they acquired in trading Deion Waiters to the Thunder really was the deciding factor in being able to get Mozgov. I mean, late first-round picks, I don't particularly value them that highly. And when you can get a skilled center that can space the floor a little bit, he defends, he's quick on his feet, which is great for this fast-breaking team, I think it's a no-brainer decision.
Oh, of course it was. You know, I do fantasy basketball. I've said this 1,000 times. Even when he was getting less than 25 minutes, I was still recommending him. And 25 minutes is my Mendoza line. I think he's fantastic. I've enjoyed watching that. But one thing, and the defense has improved, and this tells you how bad the defense was before they got here, but they are right now 16th in the NBA in terms mm-hmm. of efficiency, and they are 21st in the NBA in their defensive efficiency rating. Now, right. what do you make of that? How? Because the thing is this is what I wanted to ask you, is that when was the last time a team not in the top 10 in defensive efficiency won an NBA championship? Because a lot of people here in Akron, Ohio are telling me the Cavs are going to win a championship.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I've looked into this before. I can't seem to recall when that was the case. Really, they need to be playing as a top 10 defensive team in the playoffs. What they do for the season is irrelevant. It's a weird, weird, weird situation where there's so many new pieces. The trade halfway through the season completely flipped what this team is. So, I mean, if they can be playing at that level in playoffs, that's the only thing that matters. The regular season stats are not the case. They're still not there yet, but they're making strides in the right direction.
No, that's a very good answer, because that's exactly right. They are making strides. I don't think they're ever going to be a great defensive team with the personnel that they have now, but they are playing better. I'm going to give you that. That I'll give you now. 28 games left on the docket. Mm-hmm. 16 of those games are on the road. What do you see happening the rest of the way out?
Well, you know what? They need to finish really strong in February, because March gets difficult. March gets really, really difficult. There's a lot of good teams on the road there. So they need to win this game against Washington, which is their first game out of the All-Star break. That would be a big one. And they need to finish strong in February to keep pressure on Washington, Chicago, and Toronto. After that, I mean, they're going to need to really dig deep and get some quality road wins. The schedule lightens up at towards the end. It really does get easy for the last month, but they really need to dig deep and get some quality wins on the road in March.
Well, I agree with you because, March is a good one because the schedule lightens up a bit for them at the end there, or I should say the April schedule lightens up for mm-hmm. them. But March is kind of tough, and there are a lot of games on the road, and it is tough. You know, one of the things they don't do well, and I don't know if it's communication or what it is, but, you know, they give up a lot of threes. A team like Atlanta feasts on that, and how do you see them changing and fixing that?
Well, it's really tough. It's tough to say exactly how you would go about doing that. Obviously, as Amon Shumpert gets more and more comfortable and his minutes get increased, he's going to do a good job at limiting the amount of perimeter touches. Basically, the main thing they got to do is take away penetration, because the most dangerous three-pointers come off driving kicks. So if you can keep people out of the lane, keep them on a perimeter game, even if you are giving up some three-point attempts, those are eventually going to go cold. And in a seven-game series, most teams end up dying by the three.
Usually they do. You're right. You know, and that's why I say to people, you know, it's probably more of a communication, more of a we have not played together very long type of deal, because you never know who's going to do what. And defense is all about communication. Look at the Spurs, how well they played defense in the playoffs last year. It's because they've all played together for years, and they know each other. This is a brand-new basketball team. They've made mm-hmm. certain of that. The only one left from last year is what, Kyrie Irving and Tristan Thompson getting any quality minutes, right?
Right. Yeah. Or hopefully that's the case, because I don't want to see Dellavedova get too many minutes.
Yeah, you don't like him much. I like little Deli. He's all right. You know, you'll piss off all the Australian people that listen to my show. But, you know, and the last thing, we've got about a minute left, Justin. You know whose butt is off the griddle now? Is David Blatt, and people are starting to appreciate the things that you and I talked about he was able to do in the preseason, because I'm a big fan of David Blatt, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad he didn't get scapegoated, because basically the issue was everyone knew he was a good coach. It was whether or not the team was going to listen to him and buy in. They appear to have done that, and they're playing a really beautiful brand of basketball right now. Actually, overall, as a fan of the NBA, when you look at Atlanta, Golden State, and the way Cleveland's playing, we're seeing some of the best passing team basketball that I've seen in a long time.
Oh, yes, you are absolutely right, and that's the best part of it all. As they're passing the ball, Cleveland's even moving the ball. And by the way, I'm pretty tough on their defense, but let me just close with this. Over their last 10 games, Cleveland is fourth in the NBA in defensive efficiency. See, I do my homework. Justin, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me back.
All right, that was Justin Rowan, and you can catch him over at fearthesword.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio. Everybody get
up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, no. I think it probably comes from porn as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at BlazersEdge.com.
Maximum Sports Channels is more than just a radio station. Phil's Fantasy Sports Blog, the writer's garret, up-to-the-minute news feeds, great sports and entertainment commentary, Maximum Sports TV, including professional powerboat racing, and of course, the hottest music on the planet. Maximum Sports Channels. We're more than just a radio station.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Oh,
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Baltimore Orioles are a team that we've been trying to talk about for a while now, and we're going to do it today. And when I say we, please welcome from Rush Olson, creative and sport. Rush Olson is in the house. Rush, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I am well. Good to be here, Phil.
It's great to have you here talking baseball when it's like sub-zero. I feel like I'm in Antarctica here today. But the Baltimore Orioles, they did not do much in the terms of acquisitions during this winter. They still have the same pitching staff, basically. What do you think about this baseball team? Is this a team that's going to win 90 games this year?
I think there's a possibility they are. And here's what, if there's something to like about what they did in the offseason, there's the tendency, the guys they let go, especially the big bats, Markakis and Cruz, are on the other side of 30. And at some point, those guys, their production is going to decline, especially with Cruz coming off the year he had. You knew he was going to get a good contract. And I almost feel like what the Orioles said is, okay, this is hard, but we've got to, at some point, those guys are not going to be as productive as they were. There's a track record in baseball, you know, for guys that get older that aren't as productive, that when you get your team too overburdened with them, and I'll point to the Yankees, who we're going to talk about later this week, it ends up costing you some years. And I think what they said is it may be painful for this year, although it may not be, but because of the guys they've got coming back from injury. But they said, we have to do that. We've got to make that decision that that's not the direction we're going to go. And so that's what they did. And so, especially given that the division is maybe not as strong as it has been some years, I think they did what they, it's hard for me to disagree with what they did.
Yeah, I think they went to do what they wanted to do. You know, the one pickup they did make was Travis Snyder, and I think he's going to have a great year in Camden Yards. Their outfield is pretty solid. You know, though, I said this last year, and I'll say this again, I am not in love with this pitching staff. Not.
It doesn't jump out at you. What I think they have is depth in the staff. I think they've got a solid, if not exceptional, starting rotation. They've got some arms in the bullpen that have been effective, again, if not necessarily star quality. And then they've got some young pitchers coming up that could make a difference and maybe move them up to that next level. And so, you know, is that going to be good enough in this division? It might be.
It was good enough last year.
Well, absolutely it was. And they've got those guys back in the rotation. They've, you know, the guy, Dylan Bundy, who's a top prospect, has got another year under his belt. Maybe he'll be ready to contribute this year. The big thing with the Orioles is the guys they have coming back from injury and suspension.
Because yes, they're, of course.
Matt Wieters is supposedly going to be ready for opening day. Manny Machado, he's a guy that hopefully will be a big-time contributor for them this year. Chris Davis is going to be back. So, you know, you take a look at all that and say, all right, well, you know, maybe they are going to be pretty good.
Well, they will be, but I don't think they're going to be 90 wins good. You know, when you look at this pitching staff, I want to go back to this for a minute. Chen was one of those guys, I think he won, 16 games last year? No one saw that coming. I don't think he's going to be able to do that again. Chris Tillman is technically their ace, and he's probably a second starter anywhere else. Bud Norris came from Houston. It is what it is. He had a good year last year. Can he duplicate that? Can he replicate what he did in 2014? That makes me nervous. Miguel Gonzalez, he might be steady, but the guy that they really need to step up who didn't because he kind of held out too long last year was Ubaldo Jimenez. If he has a decent year, he's going to push one of these guys out. And you mentioned Dylan Bundy, and he's another one who, you know, they might wind up trading him at some point. Because they're going to have, if this staff can conjure up some way to win, to get 70 Ws, 65 Ws as a staff, they might be all right. You did, okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I just was going to agree with you about Ubaldo Jimenez. I mean, to me, he's a huge key. If he achieves the form that he had, you know, during the best years of his career, now all of a sudden it takes that rotation up a serious notch.
Well, it almost has to. And then you mentioned the guys coming back from injury, Matt Wieters. You know, they won all those games and he missed like most of them. So that's a big plus if he can get it done. That Joseph kid did a nice job, though, last year, really. And then you've got over here, you've got Chris Davis. And that's such a strange thing. You know, I'm completely against performance-enhancing drugs, cheating, whatever. But this situation is a different situation because he needs it to function as a normal human being. And he should never have been suspended for that. He's going to miss opening day, but you're looking at a guy who fell off the ladder pretty good, and the reason, because he didn't get to take what he needed to function, and now he'll be able to.
Well, I agree, and I knew Chris Davis when he was at the Rangers and had a very positive impression of him. I don't know anybody that didn't like Chris Davis at the Rangers, and he never struck me as the type of guy that would do something untoward. And you know, I'm not terribly hung up on whether somebody took performance-enhancing drugs or not. But yeah, in this case, I thought it was a really good example of why the draconian drug policy is so not the way to go. Because here was a guy who really, yeah, he was just taking stuff because it helps him function. And all of a sudden, wham, he didn't get to play and it hurts his team. And maybe he should have been a little bit more buttoned up on the protocols, but the protocols are complicated. And yeah, so I have all kinds of sympathy for Chris Davis.
Well, I do too. I think that a healthy Chris Davis, I like the year or the first half of the season that Steve Pierce had. He had a nice year. J.J. Hardy is back, and he's got a big contract now, so we'll see how he does. Mikado, Oakland A's fans hate him, but it is, well, for good reason, I think. A lot of people dislike the young fella, but if he can play a full season healthy, which, you know, well, we'll see. That'll be all right for them.
Well, and I think what you like about his situation and of Wieters is when you think about them coming back, they're neither of them are 30 yet. Machado is much younger. And so I think, and Davis as well. I mean, he's not an old player. And so when you think about the odds on those guys putting up good numbers and being able to have their bodies bounce back from injuries, the odds are much better for those guys than that, let's say, a Nelson Cruz, who, again, also one of my favorite guys from my time in Texas, will avoid injury. And so I think that the bets they're making are good ones based on the age of those players.
Yeah, and we can't forget Adam Jones. He's an MVP candidate every year. If he just goes out there and plays every night. He didn't need to have a great year last year. Compared to most people, he had a fantastic year. But I think you're going to see him probably look to go along a few more times. The rest of the outfield, though, is Alejandro Diaza and, again, Travis Snyder. That's a good bunch out there. This is a good baseball team. And we've got about a minute left, Rush. Zach Britton is the closer. He was the guy who they thought was going to be the ace of the staff at one point and moved him to the closer. And I think he's a good one.
Sure, absolutely. And that bullpen has got some solid guys in there. Another guy that I really like from Texas, Darren O'Day, is in there, and he's been good from the time they got him. They signed Wesley Wright, a usable left-hander. Brian Mattis hopefully ends up being effective for them potentially in the bullpen. They've got some guys in there that can fill it out. I like what you said about this team. Yeah, they are a good team. They're solid top to bottom. They're a solid team. Is that going to be good enough in the East? Well, I think it might be.
You know, you got Toronto looming, and Boston's retooled, and we're going to talk about the Spankies later this week. And then we've got – who else is in there?
Well, you've got Tampa Bay, who's kind of rebuilding.
About Tampa Bay, yeah, with Joe Madden. Well, Joe Madden's going to be the manager again because I fired him from the Cubs.
I remember that. Yes, you did that last week, creating some controversy.
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. I didn't fire anybody from the Orioles yet because they seem to have done a good job, Rush. I'm not so sure they're going to catch the Toronto Blue Jays this year, though. If the Blue Jays stay healthy, they're going to be pretty good. But Buck Showalter. Yeah, you know what? As long as they beat the Spankies, God bless the Orioles. Great stuff today, Rush.
Thanks, Phil.
All right, that was Rush Olson. You can catch him over at rusholson.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of sports talk, and joining me is, well, my co-host on the Peachtree Hoops podcast, or one of my co-hosts. He is the editor of PeachtreeHoops.com, and he is covering the best team in the NBA right now, the Atlanta Hawks. Please welcome Chris Willis to the show. Chris, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing good, Phil. Appreciate you having me, as always.
Oh, I enjoy having you here. You guys are a big part of the show, and we're really thrilled to have you here. You know, it's the All-Star break, and it's kind of a slow time, and it's a good time. We all get to recharge our batteries, and the players get to, hopefully. But there's rumors out there. People are getting bought out left and right, trade rumors. The deadline is in 3 days. Gary Neal's name has been bandied about and tossed around as a potential Atlanta Hawk. What do you think about that rumor?
Well, there's a lot of things floating around out there right now. You know, the Hawks obviously created a little bit of a stir when they traded Adrian Payne to Minnesota, which freed up a roster spot. They'd been mentioned in association with Ray Allen. There was a report that the team also met with his representatives. You know, Gary Neal's a name we've heard before a little bit. You know, as far as I know, he still is with the Timberwolves. He's not negotiated a buyout yet. You know, I don't know. You know, it's a tough fit for me, honestly. I like Neal as a player in a lot of respects, although he's not played really well this year. But, you know, I'm looking at this Hawks roster, and I see the need for more of a wing guy than a guy like Neal, who's a little bit undersized. You know, I'm sitting here looking at Shelvin Mack, and I'm wondering, is Neal that much of an upgrade over him? So I'm not really sure where those rumors are coming from, and it'd be an interesting dynamic if the Hawks did actually pursue him and add him to the roster to see how the rotation would shake out.
I don't like this idea of Gary Neal. He's a good player. He would be great for a team like Minnesota, where he is, but he's not even great for them. Is he better than Shelvin Mack? No. And here's the other thing too, Chris, is that development matters. And Shelvin Mack is still in development, and he's done a fantastic job about it. Fantastic. I'm creating new words as we speak on Monday morning here, dude. But you know what? I honestly don't like that one. I like the Ray Allen one better. I'm not a big fan of Judas Shuttlesworth, but still in all, he would be sort of what I would think the Hawks would look for. They're a three-point shooting team, and he would be fantastic coming off the bench behind Kyle Korver.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think a lot of people are drawing – the Neal rumors come from, you know, Coach Bud's association with the Spurs. You know, and Neal's got championship experience from his time in San Antonio. But, I mean, with Thabo Sefolosha going down for 6 to 8 weeks, calf injury, you know, he suffered a similar injury last year and never really recovered from it. It was pretty bad in the playoffs for Oklahoma City. You know, it is a concern. You know, ideally, I think you'd like to have, the Hawks would like to have a guy that could shoot the ball well and also defend. That's not really Ray Allen's strength there. He's a great shooter, championship guy, high-level character guy to add to the thing, but he's not that great of a defender. So, you know, when you look at that, I guess if Atlanta would weigh it, if they could hide Allen in their defensive system enough to make it work. But Thursday trade deadline, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what direction Atlanta goes, if they go in one at all. I mean, they could just obviously go forth with what they have.
Yeah, they've done a pretty good job so far. You know, the game against the Celtics, was that a wake-up call to them? Because they were flying, and then they kind of hit the skids there with Boston in Boston. I kind of attribute it to, okay, it's the holiday, our break is here, and they kind of look past the Celtics. Do you think that that's going to happen again?
I put up a headline that was almost a wake-up call, a loss for Atlanta. But, you know, you look at it now, I mean, those guys, they checked out a little early for the All-Star break, I think. They put Boston on the ropes two or three different times in that game, but just never landed the knockout punch. You know, I think it's important for this Hawks team to realize that, you know, they're not a team that's just flying under the radar anymore. They're going to get every opponent's best effort every night, as long as they're at the top of the standings. And, you know, Mike Budenholzer was quick to credit the Celtics after that loss for the job they did. They never quit. Brad Stevens' team never quit. And, you know, they just kept plugging away, and then they stole one at the end.
And that's just what happened, exactly. But the Hawks still have a 6.5-game lead. They have a couple of games against playoff teams this week, Toronto and Milwaukee. Now, what do you expect to see from the Hawks coming back against Toronto? And I believe that game is when? Thursday night, right?
Friday.
Friday night, okay.
Friday at home. Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. I think Toronto wants to come into Atlanta and make a statement. They've taken two of the three meetings with the Hawks, and you know, I think they want to cement themselves as put it in Atlanta's mind that, you know, they're a formidable opponent. You know, I'm hoping that the Hawks needed a break. It looked like they were running out of gas. It wasn't just quite as sharp that last week before heading into the All-Star break. I know they've had several players involved in All-Star weekend, but I think it's gonna be a good thing for them to get away and come back recharged. So that, I think Friday's going to be a heck of a ball game. It's a great matchup against two of the probably top three or four teams in the Eastern Conference.
And it's a good chance for Atlanta to put some distance between them and Toronto. I think if I'm Atlanta, I want to win this Eastern Conference, and I want to be the number one seed, and I want home court advantage all throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. I don't want to go on the road, even though they have a very good road record. I want the games that matter to be played at home, and knocking off Toronto and then knocking off Milwaukee this week, it just puts more distance between them.
Yeah, agreed. And like you said about the Bucks, you know, they've split two meetings with them. And Milwaukee hammered the Hawks at home earlier, but Atlanta came back the next night and won in Milwaukee. So, yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's a statement game, even though it is a regular season game. The Hawks still have a healthy lead, but, you know, it's important to come out of the break strong, get things moving back in the right direction, and build some momentum again.
And that's, you know, even though they didn't really lose any momentum, you know, they just lost a ball game. They're still 7-3 over their last 10. They're still playing fantastic basketball. The rest will do them good. And I don't see what everybody else sees about Milwaukee. You know, I'm not fond of that team. I don't like Jason Kidd. But I think Atlanta goes 2-0 this week. That's what I see them going 2-0. And throughout, I think throughout the rest of this regular season, you're going to see the same Atlanta Hawks team. They have a coach that probably should be talked about, and we talked about this, is him being coach of the year. I don't see any reason why this Hawks team is going to slow down. I have no reason to believe that they will.
Yeah, I mean, if they stay healthy, I don't see it either. You know, there's questions if whether they could – and we've seen the defense slip back a little bit, back to the pack. Losing Thabo Sefolosha has definitely played a part in that. But barring injury, I think this Hawks team is going to be in it for the rest of the way. They've caught some breaks early on, but they've beat a lot of good teams by a lot of big margins. You know, so – it's going to be an interesting run down the stretch. And I agree with you. I think home court advantage is huge for this team. And I think that's the goal. I mean, they'd like to play four out of every seven games at Phillips Arena in the playoffs. So, it'd be an interesting test to start on Friday night with Toronto.
And I think they'll handle their business. You know, one of the things that I've learned in watching basketball for as long as I have is good teams usually get better after the break. And Atlanta's still really a work in progress, believe it or not. I think people don't realize that this is still a work in progress. These are young guys, and they're playing so well.
Yeah, it's a young team, and I think they're confident. It's a confident group. They carry themselves well. I just want to watch them transform from the team that nobody – from flying under the radar to being the favorite. You know, I think that's a natural maturation process, and the Hawks are doing that during the regular season. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. But yeah, I'm not expecting them to fall off the cliff in the second half by no means.
And if they do, we have big microphones and we'll let them have it. Great stuff today, Chris. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Phil. It's always fun.
All right. We'll see you later in the week. We'll talk a little more hoops. That was Chris Willis, and you can catch him over at PeachtreeHoops.com. You can also listen to the Peachtree Hoops podcast that Chris is a part of. Jason Walker, his co-editor-in-chief, is a partner, and I'm involved too. And that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good, and most importantly.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.